This episode of The Disciplined Investor is supported by Our Crowd. Our Crowd helps you get early access to the private market. If you're interested in investing, join Our Crowd at OurCrowd.com/TDI.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of The Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Heading into the end of the quarter, the bull bear fight continues. Large caps fall for the week, small caps fall further. Massive outflows, the election, and this little ditty is another possibility to blame for the sell-off, and a few financial tips to help you get along all this and much more on episode number 681 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello there, and welcome back to another episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm Andrew Horowitz, and I am the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I am the founder of Horowitz & Company, where we manage money and we do things that we talk about throughout the show and the different types of strategies that we discuss. And this is not theoretical, right? This is not just some academic type of discussion that is never implemented. This is what we do on a regular basis, and this is what we do for clients. So when we talk about the things on this show, these are real life kind of examples and actions that we utilize within our portfolio. So something to really consider, I think, and to really have in the back of your mind as we go through this. A couple of quick notes of interest before we do anything at all, because there's some scheduling issues this week with some of the things that are going on. First of all, Monday, when we usually have our after-hours Q&A pop-up webinar, which we do on 4:30 on Mondays, where you get the opportunity to ask any questions that you have related to finance and kind of get some clarity. We go over a variety of things related to what's happening from the past week. Anyway, this week is canceled due to Yom Kippur, and we're going to pick it up next week. So that's going to be the 28th of September is canceled. So October, what date is that? October 5th. So October 5th, we'll be back with that. And if you want to join us, all you have to do is register, because it is a webinar structure. All you have to do is go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com on the top right. There's a little area to register, and register for that. And that's going on pretty strong. We started that, I think, in March or April with the idea that, you know, we're going to do this for a month or so, as a lot of concern about the markets and what's going on. And probably I thought, you know, it's going to last a little while, and then we'll just taper it off. And I said, we'll continue it, though, as long as there's interest. And there's an amazing amount of interest. I mean, the room is pretty packed throughout. Lots of great questions that come in each and every week. So if you want to join us, do that. The second announcement I want to make is that this week's DH Unplug is unfortunately also canceled. It is being preempted by the presidential debate, which we will be watching. John C. Dvorak will be watching. I will be watching. And then next week, which I guess is the 6th, I guess we just talked about Monday being the 5th. So the 6th of October, we'll come back and we are going to analyze what's happened. It's going to be, I think, pretty interesting. Let's just keep it at that for the debate. Well, let's get into the heart of what we want to talk about this week, because there's a lot of news flow this week. There's no question about that. We had some crazy election news on the balance of power and a smooth transition question of this crazy stuff like that. Then we had the latest update this week also on Europe, on the state of what's happening with coronavirus and COVID, and some shutdowns and some concerns there, and record numbers. We also saw stats on equity fund withdrawals, wild market swings that were pretty intense, I must tell you, throughout the week. And all that was just Monday, pretty much. I mean, that was just Monday last week. And then it spread out throughout the rest of the week and continued on. It was pretty interesting. And I think there's a lot of consternation and apprehension. And we're seeing that in a lot of different areas. It seemed that everything was moving along pretty well. And every time there was a little bit of quiet, there was all of a sudden this gigantic item that popped up last week. I mean, on the eco front, we saw that durable goods disappointed a bit. Initial claims were stubborn and holding over the 800,000 new claims each and every week. We did see a bright spot in the markets with real estate or the housing sector, I guess it would be better said. The housing sector, we saw the best new home sales in, I think it's more than 14 years. Pretty amazing. Single family homes in particular, not multifamily, but single family homes, the best we've seen in 14 years. And you got to wonder and ask yourself, is that really a surprise? Because there's a few things that are converging on each other right now that are starting to really show that, well, that makes a lot of sense. Maybe a few months ago when we were all thinking that, wow, we have a big recession that's happening here, which it was, and it continued on for a few months. And we saw that unemployment was extraordinarily high, which it was. It's still terrible and extremely elevated. But the initial impact from COVID, with all of that, really put a damper on anybody doing things. It was, people were paralyzed in thought of, hey, what's going to happen next? How long is this going to go on? What does this mean, not only for my health, but the economy and my own personal finances, my job? You know, the list goes on, right? All that stuff that went through that, those mental gymnastics that we all did back then about what is going to be the future here and there, by everybody halted doing anything. Not to mention that anybody in existing homes that were trying to sell were thinking, you know what? I don't want anybody coming through my house. I'm not interested in anybody walking through those doors and possibly infecting me. But what happened? Well, Bazooka Joe came. Of course, that's the Fed and Powell. And now you have ridiculously low rates on a mortgage. I mean, without trying hard right now, right? What can you get? Somewhere in the neighborhood of probably 2.25 to 2.5%, somewhere around that. I mean, I just saw a 15-year that was at 2.25%. So let's take a moment with that concept for a second. And instead of just being a casual observer of the fact of what we're seeing right now, maybe be an active participant in saying, hey, maybe I should think about, and when I say the I, that's really you, should think about, could I refinance right now? Now, aside from the fact that maybe you're thinking about buying a house, which price is elevated pretty significantly right now, maybe it's a really good time, if you have a mortgage, to think about refinancing. So I was thinking about this, and I want to give you a couple of pointers. Probably things that you know, but maybe there's somebody out there that, well, doesn't know some of these things, and maybe not thinking about this, but maybe you have a 3.75 or 4.25% mortgage, you're thinking, well, that's pretty reasonably priced, and why would I do anything more than that right now? But there is the opportunity to refinance, and if you can get rates in the 2.25 to 2.5%, especially on a 15, which I'm sure you could get if you aggressively go out and look for that out there, but there's a couple of gotchas. There's a couple of things you need to be aware of, because when you're looking at that, especially when you're on the web and you're just getting prices and you're just seeing the clickbaits that are posting for a very reasonable number, you have to be aware that oftentimes many of these mortgages, they require you to do a buy down. So think about it like this. When you buy a car, especially a lease, and they say, well, how much do you want to put down on this? Because if you put down some money, it drops your price. Well, a mortgage, in my opinion, we don't want to do that. I don't want to do that with a car either if I'm going to lease it. What I want to do is just find out what the raw rate is. So when you look at some of these rates and they say, well, you know, it's 2.1%, but you got to put down an extra $3,000. Or if it's 2.0, 6%, but you don't have to put any money down. You have to compare all these mortgages on a apple-to-apple type of comparison. In my opinion, you could probably get anywhere from 2.25% to 2.5% right now on a 15-year with no buy-down. So make sure when you're looking at this mortgage, there's no excessive fees that are involved in the raw bringing down of the cost factors of a monthly basis or the cost of the interest rate. So what happens is sometimes you'll see a mortgage that is, let's just say it's 3% on an annual basis. Let's say it's 30-year. They say, well, you can have a 3% with no money down except for closing costs. You can have a 2.75% bringing to the table $1,800 as an example. You can have a 2.5% by bringing $4,500 to the table. What you're doing is buying down your future interest. You're paying it up front. I'm not a big fan. So again, no buy down. Second, you need to take a pretty close look at the costs that are associated with the mortgage, right? What's the appraisal fee? What else they got? They got processing fees, doc stamps, possibly dependent on where you live, the cost to actually do the refinance or the mortgage, the cost that is, it's tax, essentially a tax by your local municipality, possibly your state. What are the legal fees? Also, oh, what about title insurance? So when you do all this, realize something, that you don't necessarily have to utilize the services of the closing agent of the refinance company. So if you go on the web and you go to, well, I don't know, Quicken Loans or, you know, lowcostloans.com or IGotTheBestDeal.org, whatever you're going to get these numbers, they're probably going and shopping it and advertising it and then selling it to some major loan firm anyway, a mortgage originator, and a mortgage company. So what you're going to do is they're going to probably have all these bundled prices, but you could say to them, you know, what about if I was to go and utilize my own attorney or my own title insurance company? Maybe you know somebody. Right now, everybody knows somebody in the title insurance business. You have to. First of all, everybody's a real estate agent out there, right? I mean, how many of your friends have become real estate agents? How many of you have become real estate agents in the last couple of 3 years? A lot of people have. A lot of people are doing title work. There are attorneys that you probably know that specialize in the area of real estate and do closings. They can probably save you a good deal of money on the closing costs. So when you're shopping for mortgages, I really highly encourage you to do this right now, especially if there's an opportunity to refinance. Refinancing at these levels is pretty extraordinary. But ask a lot of questions. Ask, hey, can I break off the closing part of this and give it to my guys to find out if I could get a lower cost? You don't necessarily have to use their people. So all of this means that you have to do some shopping, do a little bit of research. But in order to save this, if you have like a 3.5% mortgage or more, I mean, what are you waiting for right now? This is just really good, basic financial planning right now with rates are so low. And I'm not sure how long they're going to be here. Are they going to be here forever? Are they going to go lower? Even if they come down a bit, I mean, let's really get our heads together on this. Let's say they come down a little bit in the future. Well, you can always refinance, but how bad are you if you could only get the best you've ever gotten on your mortgage is 2.5%? I mean, that's pretty good. I remember the days they were 14%. You may be saying, what are you talking about? 14%? How could anybody afford a mortgage at 14%? That's what it was. And this is why prices of houses have come up so substantially, because the cost of money is so cheap, the price of the house adjusts upward. So you're going to save money on your monthly payments if you're at a higher rate now, or maybe even you're going to cut down the time it's going to be to pay off your mortgage, maybe from a 30-year to a 15-year with not that big of a differential. Now, obviously, if you don't have a job, there may be some issues with this, but if you are working and you have the credit, especially the credit part of it, I would really, again, highly encourage you to utilize this, we'll call it adjustment. And while it's some work to do so, I think it's a good time to do that for all of our futures right now. They're thinking about where we're going to be in the next 10, 15, 20 years. Because these little adjustments, these little changes that we can make for our own financial benefit, it's not all about constantly what's happening with this stock or that stock. You know, when we look at our financial plan overall, because, you know, I want to take a little bit of a holistic look at this. Obviously, when we look into our retirement, we want to have enough money to live because we're going to have some needs to pay things. Well, one of those things is a mortgage, for example, potentially. And if we pay it off early, well, one of those things won't be the mortgage that we have to worry about. And therefore, the money that we've saved and that we've worked so hard to invest properly through a diversified portfolio and all that other good stuff is that much stronger in the future because we don't have to utilize as much money to pay for the potential of a 30-year if we just cut it down to a 15-year because we could do so because of the affordability of a lower interest rate. Doesn't that make sense? I don't have any particular names. I don't have any mortgage companies. Just go out and find someone out there that you either have worked with or just do some shopping. There's plenty out there right now to look at. So I guess the other question is, what other adjustments are there? And question and ask yourself and maybe saying to you that why don't you just take a moment once all the football games are over, once all of the debates are done, or maybe not all of them, but in between, how about that? In between the news, in between all that, in between the backyard barbecues, take a look at what other adjustments that you can make. Because they're not just going to take care of themselves. They're not going to just pop up out of nowhere and say, oh, hey, you know, I can get you a better rate on your cell phone service. Make those calls. I've done it many times over the years. I took some time. I just wrote down some things that I was paying for, and I said, let's see if I could do better on this. I'd make a call. I mean, the classic is Sirius XM, right? If you have that in your car, you call, hey, you know what? I'm canceling. Or I'd like to get a better rate. And let's say you're paying, I don't know, $12 a month or whatever it is. I say, well, we can offer you $7.95 a month. Or recently with my cable, I saved myself about 25% on my cable. I called up. I said, you know what? I can't do this anymore. This is not what I want. I want to think about doing a different kind of internet only. We kind of went through everything. And when I calculated it all out, we came up with a much better plan. Again, saving money by some of these small adjustments. Let's talk about markets real quickly, and we have a lot of other things to talk about. Interesting thing that happened last week. Top of the show today, I talked about some of the things that were causing some angst with markets. One of the things that happened was the third highest outflows from equities last week on Wednesday was reported, and that's saying something. That's saying something. Big outflow. I mean, obviously, we saw a turnaround on Friday, but people are starting to really start, thinking about where they want to be positioned after this nice run-up that we've seen. This political upheaval that we're seeing. But I guess we're kind of getting used to this political nonsense that's going on. But there was one thing that happened last week that was really interesting, and it could be the reason why we saw that big sell-off, something that really I found to be, like, when I saw it, I was, oh, interesting. But before we get to that, I want to mention something. I want to talk about our crowd again because, you know, a lot of people have wished that they've been in early, right? I wish I could have gotten one of those great IPOs that happened in 2019, some of the ones that are happening in 2020. And our crowd investors were, and now you can join them in what's potentially next. With our crowd, accredited investors have access to invest directly, easily, and most importantly, early. So they have a lot of investments already that have IPO'd, like, for example, Beyond Meat, right? You know that name. That one's something that you know. Or other companies that have been bought, like by other companies like, for example, Intel and Nike, Microsoft, Oracle. But today you could join our crowd's investment in TechC. And this is a software company. It's a startup. And it's, well, essentially revolutionizing how leading enterprise companies provide remote customer support. You can get in early on TechC and other opportunities at ourcrowd.com/investment. TDI. I want you to go check it out. And if you're interested, because the account is free, just to see what's going on there, as it gets, they got some really cool things that are going on and really interesting opportunities. Go to OurCrowd.com/TDI. All right, so with that, and I mentioned that there was this eye-opening moment that I had. This moment where I said, oh, that's something that may be impacting markets. Kind of this little ditty that passed by. In fact, it's probably one of the most important reasons I can think of in a while why there could be some further pressure on markets. And it was a note that came out from one of the companies that we work with. It's called Interactive Brokers. And it was pertaining to margin. And what they did was they said that due to volatility that was expected to continue into the election season and through the election process, they were raising margin requirements. Raising margin requirements. And what that means is that if you were able to leverage a portfolio, I'm just going to use some basic numbers, leverage a portfolio by whether it was intraday trading or overnight trading by a certain amount, let's just call it 50%, just as a number, just something to look at. If you were able to do that, and now what happens is that they say, you know what? We are going to be pulling back on that, raising the requirement of margin. So no longer can you do 50%, you could do 35%, raising the requirement that you have to have in comparison to the margin amount, the leverage amount that you have. And it makes sense, but what they're also going to do is gradually increase from now until, I guess, post-election when there's a clear winner, which means that anyone who is leveraging may need to start right now pulling down positions if they are over-levered according to the new margin requirements. And as we get closer to the election, we'll also be required to continue pulling down positions, not able to fully leverage their portfolio. Now, whether you agree with this or don't agree with this, doesn't matter, but think about it for a second. From the point of view and perspective of these brokers, they're saying, you know what? Hey, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen here. It looks like we're set up for a lot of turmoil. It looks like we're being prepped for a contested election. Whether or not that happens or not, or there's a landslide one side or the other, it doesn't really matter. But the fact is, we think that it looks like it's very clear that there's going to be some uncertainty there. And of course, uncertainty yields what? What does uncertainty yield? Investor consternation, aggravation, and confusion. One of the things the markets doesn't like at its height is questions, unresolved issues that leads to volatility. And that volatility is something they're very concerned about. And especially after what we saw happen in March. And don't forget, how much money did some of these brokers lose on the oil? Now, not all brokerage houses will be doing this, but it could be happening in areas that we don't see. It may be happening with hedge funds. It may be happening with CTAs on futures. So just something to be aware of, because what this could and what it really does spell is the idea of forced selling into the election. That doesn't mean it needs to be a cascade, crazy numbers, because we don't know how many people are leveraged and how much leverage is going to be allowed on certain positions versus others. But they're setting the stage, the brokerages, and I think this is probably going to follow with others that are out there. And of course, we're not really just worried about retail, but we're worried about institutional in the same respect, because that is where the money is all held, right? Not just the retail, it's the institution. And it's just one note. But again, I think we could assume that this is something that may be going on with other brokers, and it can constrain the amount that's going to be invested in the market on this, we'll call it, over-the-top balances. So it could be some of the reason also why people are starting to sit up and saying, you know what, I'm not going to wait till this all happens. I'm going to get ahead of this. So this is something that's going to be a major item to just keep on the sidelines when it comes to the election. And maybe once actually there'll be a, I guess once there is, we got to think about the other side of this now that I start thinking about this. The other side of this is once, in fact, we get back to a quote-unquote normal level of leverage, a margin that we're allowed to be using in an account, whether it's an institution again, whether it's a hedge fund, whether it's an individual, potentially people will load up again. Potentially. There'll be a bit of a collective breath of relief once it's over. Again, uncertainty yields volatility. And it results in concern. So something I think is going to be a big issue. We'll see if there's going to be that big contest, lawsuits, and all that. But it's going to be anybody's guess in terms of how this is all going to play out when it comes to that. But I don't recall seeing historically a blanket margin change like this in the past, and particularly the past elections. I don't recall seeing it. It may have been there. But it didn't seem as important at that time. The other thing that I think spooked markets last week, and I think we really need to put in perspective, is the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the need now to have a Supreme Court replacement eventually. Because I think what's going on right now and where there's that level of concern is that, well, President Trump and the Republicans want to get this done as soon as possible before the election. The Democrats are saying, well, no. And all sorts of reasons why we should do it and why we shouldn't do it and why back in 2016, you know, we didn't. But in 2018, Lindsey Graham said this, and then we have McConnell saying that. Okay, all right. Put that all aside for a second because both sides have their points on this. Both sides, there's no question that both sides of the political spectrum have their points and why they want to do what they want to do. But forget that. Let's talk about what it means for the markets for a second, because that's what we're here for, right? We're not here to debate the political or legality of what's going on. We're talking about what's going to be the impact on the markets. And I know you're smart. We have the smartest listeners out there. And I know this because, you know, over the years, when we first started talking about certain things that were political hotspots. So we got all these emails from people until I really started explaining that when we talk about some of this, it's all about the impact on the markets, not about how we feel about something, because we're an investing podcast. If you haven't figured that out yet, you know, this is all about finance. It is not about anything about the political spectrum, aside from how it impacts the markets. So here we are, right? We have a situation where there's going to be an all-out attempt to get a Supreme Court nominee passed through Senate confirmation process before the election. Now, what does that mean? Aside from the fact that it's a big distraction, the problem is that there's going to be a major line and a major offense and a major defense set up on this, trying to persuade us not to get this done on one side and persuade us to get this done on the other. And this distraction that will take us through, I think it looks like, last I saw was somewhere about mid to second week of October, mid to third week of October, right before the election. It's going to stymie the efforts of both parties getting together to try to put together a stimulus bill that is so needed to help people that are still out of work, for businesses that are failing, and all the other issues that are going on with the continuing problems from the pandemic, the shutdowns, and everything else that's happening. Because Congress can't walk and chew gum at the same time. Let's be honest on this. I mean, and if the Supreme Court nomination process heats up, which it will, I think it's going to be very hard-pressed for us to see any side compromising, because they're not going to want to compromise on that if the other side's not going to compromise on this? And they're going to somehow link these things together and try to tie everybody up. And whether you look at the Republican side or the Democratic side, it doesn't really matter who you think is the wrong one or the right one here. The fact is the impact is going to fall squarely on those people, those consumers, those individuals that are in dire need, that are caught up in the middle of this gamesmanship. That's a big issue. And while right now it doesn't, we don't seem to have, well, either the political will or the need to have lockdown, I mean, stay-at-home orders, straight lockdowns at this exact moment. Right now we're talking about, right, last weekend of September 2020. At this point, we don't seem to have that need. In fact, Florida just opened up 100% of the bars and restaurants and said pretty much, you know what, have at it. Indiana did the same thing, while at the same time, we're seeing that in France and the UK have just hit their highest daily count ever for new cases. And both countries are now adding restrictions for certain businesses and for times and for it's very complex. There's more angst that has been created about this again. But here in the U.S., the problem is that we are at a logjam. The Democrats say, hey, $2.2 trillion is all we're coming down to. The Republicans, the Democrats said that. The Republicans are saying, you know what, I think $1.2 trillion, $800 billion, that's the number we want right now. And you know what, if you're going to give us a hassle about this, well, we'll just kind of take it back to the drawing board and figure it out. Problem again is, who is that hurting? I think the fiscal that we put out, the $3.2 trillion that was given throughout the various components in the CARES Act, was probably a lifesaver for many. I mean, these low interest rates are great for businesses. It's good for long-term lending and for the country, for the economy long-term. But really, the average person, you and me, when we're in financial need, I don't think any of us are going to stand up and say, oh, I lost my job, but thank God the Fed reduced their rates. I mean, does anybody really look at it that way? I don't think so. But they say, you know what? I lost my job. And fortunately, I'm getting X amount of dollars per week from either some kind of unemployment or some government program that will help me through this, because it was not for my reason that I was let go, but maybe the company collapsed due to the weight of all this, you know, lockdowns. So where are we with all this? I think there's some deep concerns that are somewhat justified for markets, but also a good amount of opportunities are brewing. Let's kind of get to the other side of this. So I think with all of this, we have a time frame that we know about. We know that from now through, well, let's call it the end of the year, we know that the potential for a little bit of a peak in some of the coronavirus is coming to certain areas around the country. We'll have to see what happens in Florida, Indiana, and all that with New York reopening. We know that there'll be some kind of resolution on the election, okay? We know that there'll be a resolution on the Supreme Court issue. We also know that hopefully by the inauguration, there will be some kind of new stimulus plan on the table that will probably be finally voted on when they can get beyond their issues that they have currently. That will be a big help. We also know that either side of the political spectrum have different views on how they're going to handle the economy. But no matter what those are, right now we're in the stage of not knowing, uncertainty. There'll be some certainty after the election. We may not like that certainty. We may not love what we got, whether it's Trump being reelected or Biden coming in. You know, we may not like either of those situations, or we may love one or the other or hate both, or, you know, whatever it is. But point is, we'll have a little bit of greater certainty out there. So I want to talk about a minute. Oh, let me get this page up because it's, where is it? There it is. I want to talk about the economics that are coming up. Next week's a really busy week for economics. And then I have another tip that I want to give you. This one can actually, I'll tease it for you. You can get certain people out there, you may be able to get $400 in a class action lawsuit. I'll talk about that in a second. But next week coming up, we have some important economics that are happening. And it's a pretty busy week. Starts on Tuesday. Monday's really nothing. On Tuesday, we have advanced international trade and retail inventories. But more importantly, we have the S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index. Expectations are for the 20 city to grow in price, the price appreciation by 4.2%, which would be the highest we've seen in a while. Last month was 3.5%. And I don't think there's any, of people that are thinking that it's going to be a low number. I think that the potential for higher prices for homes right now is very reasonable. As we talked about for a while today about the low interest rates and what we're seeing that, you know, people are putting up their houses for sale for, I don't know, $700,000, let's say in Brooklyn, and they're getting it sold within 4 or 5 days at $825,000. You got bidding wars that are happening. Consumer confidence, we're going to see also on Tuesday. Expectations for those to rise a little bit. We saw a little bit of a weak University of Michigan a couple of weeks ago. On Wednesday, we got GDP, the third estimate, looking still at about 31.7% negative in the hole for the second quarter. We have pending home sales and ADP employment change. That's going to be important. It looks like there's going to be a plus 700,000 on the ADP employment change. On Thursday, we got personal income, personal spending. We got PCE prices, which are the preferred inflation levels for the Fed, looking at a 0.3% increase. That's the expectation. Same as it was last month. We have the ISM Manufacturing Index looking to come in at about 58. That will be the hottest it's seen in months. Construction spending also up 0.5%. So I would venture to say that that's going to be probably the estimates are off. I think it's going to be a bit higher. Coming in last month was, 0.1 last month. So I think the estimates are probably going to be low on this. On Friday, the important day of the week, we have non-farm payrolls. Expectations are to have an unemployment rate of about 8.3, which is down slightly from the 8.4 where we're currently at. 700,000 or so new jobs created, which will be the lowest we've had in a couple of months, I believe. And we also have the University of Michigan final, which is expected to come in right on where it was, which is the third estimate. And average work week and average hourly earnings. So there's a lot going on there. All right, a couple more things I want to talk about here just to finish up where we are. But I mentioned that I had another tip for you, something I dug up. Nothing major, but something that could net you a couple of bucks in your pocket if you live in Illinois. So Facebook has to pay about $650 million to users in Illinois right now. That had pictures tagged on their site over a certain time period. Seems that Facebook was collecting biometric data without your consent.
Duh.
I mean, really? Duh. So I don't know if this is going to pave the way for more settlements, because this is what they probably did on for everybody. But there's a way for you to collect some of that money that's eligible. You have to submit a claim. And if you lived in Illinois for about at least 6 months and your face appeared in a picture on Facebook after June 7th, 2011, well, that's you. If that's the case, you could be upwards of getting about $400. So what I did was I put the link to that class action lawsuit for you on the Disciplined Investor show notes on episode 681. There's a, I think I only found one place that you could do this. So if you live in Illinois, if you had your picture on Facebook, which you probably did if you live in the world, you had your picture out there, and it was tagged on the site. I don't know how you figure this all out, to be honest with you, but if you want to try to figure out how to get $400 and you meet that criteria, well, go over there, check it up. You could probably just look up Facebook Illinois class action, and I'm sure you can get the link that way as well. Just another quick tip, kind of trying to go down the list of some things that we could do right now to better our financial situation. I mean, there's all sorts of little things that you could do along the way. But again, we talked about mortgages and trying to refinance and look into that. Also looking around at other ways to save money right now. It's a good time to do so. Look at where you can kind of clip a little bit and save a little bit. Just something that will help you in the future. And to wrap it up today, I want to talk about just what's going on in Europe for a second here in terms of how it's impacting our markets in a way. The Stoxx 600 Financial Index, this is the European index of financial stocks, like banks and other financial institutions. I want you to hear this. This is amazing. It's sad. It's but I don't think this is unexpected, actually. I don't think anybody would be like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. No, it hit its lowest level in history last week. In history. So why? Talked about this on DH Unplugged last week, but there were revelations about some sneaky dealings with very, I would say, highly suspect transactions. That's the best way to describe it. Highly suspect transactions that hit a few banks, Deutsche Bank and a few others over there. Also hit us here too, JP Morgan. There was some discussion about when these particular transactions were tagged, they may have gone through anyway. I kind of gave the counter argument on DH Unplugged when I talked with John Dvorak, John C. Dvorak, that is, last week. And we talked about how, okay, just because it's labeled a suspicious transaction doesn't necessarily mean it is a suspicious transaction. And therefore, when you go through the vetting process and the compliance process, in order to get that through the checklist and then send it out, that doesn't mean that, oh, we had a suspicious transaction and it was a problem that we didn't clear and we sent it out anyway. Anyway, I think there... It's possible. Obviously, this is a newsworthy item that there was something done that may have been nefarious, that may have been out of the range, and maybe there was some money laundering, or I don't know exactly what went on here, but there was some sneaky dealings that went on, and this is not the first time. This is not the first time. And I could tell you a couple of things that I think we all know, but if not, I think that are important to recognize on this. One, the banks in the Eurozone, not all of them, but many of them, are an entirely hot mess. Just a hot mess. The reasons are, I think, because of leadership and some of the things they do. We've seen this time and time again. HSBC, that does business there. We've seen... banks like Deutsche Bank, Credit Suisse, their names keep on coming up in the news with questionable activity. The oversight there, or I would say maybe even the bank culture, is really to blame, in my opinion. The other problem you have on this is that the current rate environment is not great for banks. But remember something. One of the things about banks is that no matter how bad they do and how poorly things play out for them, very rarely do we see one of these major banks go under. What they do is they get their hand slapped, they get a fine, but somehow the central banks funnel everything back through them anyway, as we saw with the PPP program, which was basically a small backdoor bank bailout that helped to make sure that people who had a massive amount of loans or small companies that couldn't pay their bills had money to do so and therefore would make sure to have money to pay their banks the debt they owned, number one. Number two, the fees generated from that, I don't know, $800 billion of banking that went on was pretty extraordinary for the banks. But the current rate environment in Europe is a negative interest rate environment, and that's not a good situation by any means. I mean, we're seeing that. And hopefully our central bank is paying attention. But the thing that really concerns me about this is not, it is the bad way of doing business by some of these banks and the players and the bad actors that involve. But really what I'm most concerned about is that, you know, banks are loved by investors. It took me a couple of years back when to figure this all out. And I realized the reason they like it is because they're cash cows. Things can't go too wrong in the bank, and even if it goes really wrong, you're going to get bailed out. Was it somebody said once that if reincarnation is true, they want to come back as a bank? You know, because banks really have an unlimited amount of money and unlimited amount of patience and incredible amount of political backstop, because obviously they're the fabric of the financial institution in a country. But these are cash cows. And if we can't get excitement that surrounds the banking and financial industry, how in fact do we have a bull market that can really succeed without this bank participation? Now, of course, well, we had one of those incredible ones from March, the lows. We saw some bank participation, but that was like, you know, all ships floated as the tide rise in that one. But generally speaking, banks really have not participated as well as many other companies in that move off the bottom from March 23rd. I think money just moved out of the banks and said, you know what, the new cash cows are tech. But I'll still note that it's just not about the bank's participation that's the root of this phase. It's the fact that economic conditions are better with a normal yield curve. So it's not just about participation. There's other things that are going on in the background. Like, we have a flat yield curve. We have extraordinarily low emergency rates that are going to supposedly last till 2023. We're seeing a kind of a wonky flat curve that steepened a little bit last week, which banks actually did much better. But the heart of this rally has been the financial and monetary double team, tag team that has gone on. But I would like to see the banks participate more meaningfully before getting too excited about the potential for a broad-based rally. And, you know, back to the value discussion we've had. Nothing wrong with how we've come off the lows. There's nothing wrong with that at all. I'm not upset. Happy as a clam, as they say. Not sure how a clam is happy, but I am happy as a clam. It's great. I would just like to see that one other investor confidence get behind the financial sector, the banks, to really say, you know what, we have something here. Because the banks are the bedrock of the system. So I want you to think about that. We are going to close it up here. If you have any questions, of course, you go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Ask Andrew is a place that you can go. Click on that. Ask a question. Maybe we'll get to him next week. We got about three or four that I saw that I want to answer on the show, others that I answered directly. Go over to there, ask any question you have about, well, whatever the topic is, and we'll get to it. What else do we have coming up this week? This week, I told you DH Unplugged is canceled this week. I told you that the pop-up Q&A webinar is canceled this week. So I guess that I'm going to see you again round the corner in October. Have a great week. Have a safe week. Have a productive week. And have a profitable week. I'll see you again then. Thanks. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Please note that advertisements are not affiliated with the host or Horowitz & Company or affiliates. These are not to be considered investment recommendations of the host or Horowitz Company or affiliates.